everybody. Welcome to Dogs and Hogs with Russ Tanner. My name is Rodney Nabulsi. I am only on here to bug Russ Tanner relentlessly with questions about G-Day, ask him his opinion, maybe get a story or two out of him, and just talk it up. It's a Wednesday night. We got nothing else to do except talk toward football. So, Russ, let's do the 30,000-foot view of G-Day.
Yeah.
Did you go in person?
Sorry, Kirby, but I did not go in person. We had lacrosse. Apparently, my people from Wrightsville watching are going to be like, you do lacrosse now? Yeah.
What's lacrosse? Is that something you do in the gym?
It's close. It's lacrosse between a couple sports, but you get to hit people with sticks, so I kind of like it. So I had lacrosse that morning, came back, and my wife, I can say this confidently, she's a much bigger and better Georgia fan than I am. So she wanted to go. So my wife and daughter went up there to the game, and me and all the boys stayed home and watched it on TV from the recliners. So trying to train them up. But
love your wife. She's the best.
She really is the best. So I feel like I'm better prepared to talk about G-Day because I got to watch it on TV and see a lot of what actually happened. But no, I did not go up there. I don't enjoy G-Day personally. I find it boring. I find it bland. And I think that we are trying to dig nuggets out all the time about something to get. Fortunately, we had some nuggets to dig out from this past weekend, some things that kind of stood out, some guys we saw flash a little bit. So I actually watched all of it. I watched the entire G-Day, start to finish, and saw every play.
Hey, you better have, because your number one defense and number one offense were still going at it late in the fourth quarter.
Which you never did that. Look, that's the wildest thing to me. I think there's two big takeaways from that. That is absolutely wild. So when we were there, like, especially when you get to be upperclassmen, you try to get to the point to where you want to I can't let that go. Once enough, I play in lacrosse or one of my kids playing. First off, I'm not sure who Jason Council is, so I don't know if he's legitimately asking or is making fun of me. Both are real possibilities and would be okay. I watch. One of my boys is 12. He plays. We didn't have lacrosse in Wrightsville. But back in my day, 20 years ago, I went to G-Day. Like, you tried to get to the point as an offensive lineman, as an upperclassman, where you want to take your knee braces off. You want to unwrap your wrist tape, and you want to unbuckle your shoulder pads and pull your jersey up over it so it was right there and your belly hung out, flopping, and let the air get to it. So, you know, you typically, as an upperclassman, you try to get through halftime, and after that, man, it's just a dog and pony show. You know, you're waving at your mama and them in the stands. You got your girlfriend over there trying to see them. You sign an autograph for a kid, throw some wristbands up, and enjoy it. That is not the culture anymore, by the way.
Ole Miss? What was Ole Miss doing?
They had like a party, didn't they?
Yeah, they had like a hot dog eating contest and some other BS and stuff like that. Kirby's got those guys out there crack back blocking and
high intensity. And you know, and there's maybe a little bit to be said about Gunner and Carson Beck going the full game. I think that's more of a product of they don't really have any other options that are going to get there. I mean, and no disrespect. When I'm going to say this, it sounds like you're disrespecting the walk-on guys. So this is not disrespect. I have a huge amount of respect for these guys that are walk-ons on the football team.
Yes.
Especially ones that are there multiple years. They are some of the toughest.
They are my favorites. As much as all you scholarship guys will hit me up, hey, did you get any pictures of me this weekend?
Yep.
Hey, can you write a story about me? I'm like, yeah, dude, you got a ton of press. But if a walk-on hits me up, I'm like number one on my list here of guys to get. It's like Matt Stafford, no, screw that. Yep. I got to get Burt Jones because he asked me to.
Yeah, that's right. So I have what I'm about to say. Please don't take his disrespect for Colin Drake and I can't remember the other cat's name, so I'm disrespecting him. But the two walk-on guys that came in for just, you know, sniffed a cup of tea. Like, they are not at UGA to be prepared to be ready on Saturdays in the fall, okay? The Stetson Bennett's of the world are not only few and far between. They're the needle in the haystack can't even find the Stetson Bennett's of the world. That's how rare that situation is. Yeah. Those guys are there to get the scout team ready and to give a look in the fall. So when you get live action, as live as it can possibly be in a spring setting where your quarterback's getting hit being the only exception, you want Gunnar Stockton specifically, and Carson Beck doesn't hurt with all the new weapons he has now, to get those reps because they're invaluable. Right. Carson Beck, you may say Carson Beck, number one quarterback in the country, a lot of places are saying that for him, potential top 10 type pick in the NFL, whatever. You know what? He does not have Brock Bowers and Ladd McConkey, his two most consistent playmakers that he was most comfortable with. So he needs reps. And if he gets 70 reps in a game as opposed to 30, that's going to make a difference in the fall. And Gunnar Stockton needs every rep he can get because homeboy is a play away from being the man. And he's about to be given the key. If he becomes the man, he's got the keys to the Cadillac, by the way. Better not trip it up.
Hey, he almost was thrown into the fire the hard way because you saw Tate Ratledge roll into the back of Carson Beck. And I'm like, you know, biting the knuckle, starting to freak out a little bit because that would just be George's luck, you know.
Yeah.
Fluke play like that. But to your point, Ryan Puglisi, busted kneecap.
Yep.
Didn't go.
Yeah.
He could have used all those reps too, and you would love to have had it that after the halfway point, Carson is over there signing autographs on the sideline, and you got your true freshman QB out there getting reps inside Sanford Stadium, you know, with the number one offense, you know, or move Gunner to the number one offense, give him the number twos and let him go at it. That's what you would love to do. You don't have a number four quarterback, so you're thin right now. And to your point, you had to watch the entire thing because they were going. And let's get your thoughts on Carson Beck, because at the end there, he had two beautiful throws.
Yeah.
But to start the game,
shaky.
He didn't look that good.
No. And, you know, I think you don't want to overreact to what you see.
No, not at all.
Especially for the Carson Becks of the world. I mean, it's not like they don't compete in practice. So you could talk about a little bit, maybe their timing's not there from a live situation to get with their receivers or DBs. But I don't think that's the case that much because they get really competitive reps in practice. That was like the first time they've hit this spring or gone full speed in coverage. Yeah. So I think it's a matter of you were really, really vanilla on offense. You didn't do anything to try to mess with the defense and put them in a bad position. And then, you know, the other thing for him is as much as we've talked about this O-line is going to be Joe Moore Award winners, the defense line is going to struggle. The defense line handed them their lunch in the first half of that game specifically, though. The defense line gave them a lot of problems. Made it difficult for Carson Beck in there. And as fun as it is to think about, oh, it's great for the quarterback. He can't get hit. You know what else he can't do in that situation? He can't make any plays with his legs. And and Carson Beck is not Stetson Bennett, right? He's not going to be Jalen Milroe or those guys. But he can make somebody miss in the pocket and slide outside and find a wide open guy that puts a lot of pressure on defenses. And that's not even allowed in this situation. You drop back 7 yards, you stand in the pocket, throw the ball. If you move in any direction, somebody puts a pinky on you, the referees have had their lives threatened, are going to blow the whistle. So, you know, Carson made enough throws. If we didn't have film on Carson Beck playing an entire year and being a stud, I'd be much more concerned than I am. Carson Beck was a great football player last year who probably didn't get as much respect as he deserved for the way he played. So until he proves me wrong on the field, I'm not going to be worried about him because of what he did in a spring football game.
No, I'm with you there. And again, when I say there was just – and it wasn't anything in particular except the deep throws that we always – everybody can point to. Because you see the show pass, as Coach calls them, you know. It's like seven-step drop, hum it out there. But I thought we had a good point on Tuesday with Coach saying, look, the defense knew what the damn plays were practically.
Every time.
Because they're running, you've done this so many times, you know what it is. And Kirby, like you said, is very vanilla. You know you're not running it. You know you're not going to hand the ball off 60 times and chance or injury there. So they don't run the ball where you have those big pileups and guys get twisted ankles and stuff like that. So you know it's going to be a launch the ball fest. And it's just like those drills we have at camps where it's a pass rush camp. You know, it's like, hey, can you get past him? You don't have the defender doesn't have to stop and worry about the run. So he gets to, you know, swim and spin and you know, all that stuff. And it's like, man, this isn't fair. But so they knew what was coming. They jumped up, knocked a few passes down. The only thing there were just a few that were deep that were not on target.
Right.
And a lot of people made a big hay out of that. But I'm like, did you happen to see? I got to look it up in my notes here. There were, he was just killing it over the middle. I mean, just everything over the middle was a dart. He goes, Arian Smith, dart over the middle. Dart over the middle, Colby Young. Dart over the middle, Trevor Etienne. And again, a lot of guys don't like throwing over the middle of the field.
No, they don't.
No, they're not big enough. He loves throwing in all that crossing routes and all that traffic. And they were bullets. And I mean, they're barely higher than my head. And I'm only 5'11".
Yep.
And shoes.
So, on a good day.
The point is, he threw some darts, and that sideline pass to the field. He's on the boundary side. Throws to the field to Rara. Drops it in a pocket over there. I'm like, holy crap! Do y'all understand what we just saw?
Right. No. He is. I there's a couple of football terms that I really, really don't like. By the way, I don't like the term in space. Saying Travis Etienne is great in space. Well, hey, Ryan DeBolsi is pretty good in space. You're going to get a yard or two. So I hate that term. And I can't say the term arm talent because I think it's a made-up term by the NFL combine guys. But it's just arm strength and the ability to
arm strength, arm. Yes.
And Carson Beck has that in spades. I mean, he makes every single throw that you could want. I mean, he is what the NFL guys want. And we run an NFL-style offense with weapons all over the place. So I don't have concern about Carson Beck. Because, again, go back to the body of work in 2023 and what he did for you on the field when it mattered. So, would you have liked for him to have been, 24 for 30, 300 yards and 4 touchdowns? Sure. Have I lost 1 ounce of sleep out here on Old Bishop Road because of Carson Beck's G-Day performance? Nah.
Yeah.
I feel fine about that.
And, again, to me, if you've got – because – the defensive line has the timing down with that many reps. They know when to jump. They know when to bat it down.
Other teams won't be able to snap count, by the way.
They know the snap count, yeah. They won't be able to do that. But he had 2 interceptions, and both of them thrilled me for Georgia's defense. Mykael Williams standing up, getting that big paw up, batting the ball to himself, mind you. I was like, I could just imagine him doing that to Tennessee or Florida. You got to get excited about that. And that youngster out there, C.J. Allen, who got thrown into a starting role towards the end of the season, a true freshman last year, kind of baiting Carson into a throw or just not being observed and able to make that pick. Man, I'm like, it's going to suck not to have Pop back there. He'll be at Kentucky, but – you got to feel so good about Georgia's inside linebackers. Smile Munden didn't play.
It's an embarrassment of riches.
It really is.
When you recognize Pop Johnson, Jameis DeMoss Johnson, call him Pop. He's the guy that's going to go down as a DGD, even though he's transferred out, because he was a heart and soul of that defense and was a very, very good football player in the SEC. He transferred because he knew what his playing time situation was about to be if he stayed at Georgia, because those young dogs behind him are freaking dudes. C.J. Allen looks like Roquan Smith with 2 more inches on his body of height. I mean, especially with number 3 on there. Like, he's the dude, man. Like, he is the dude. And then those other cats start to show up. You mentioned that Smile Munden. Smile Munden is an unbelievable athlete. Didn't even play. You look at
Ray. One of the best I've seen, man.
You start lining Jalen Walker up in there and allow him to do things, blitz and moving around, having a little bit of freedom to come and attack. I think you're going to see this Georgia defense. Mykael Williams stands up on the outside now. We saw that. That was something we haven't seen much of. They moved him out there to get that dude paid in the NFL and let him disrupt from the edge. You're going to see Jalen Walker moving around a lot, blitzing the A-gap, doing lots of those nose tackles to take into it to make sure that your D-line is not getting double-teamed. You can blitz that guy, and he's going to get some good matchups and backs trying to block him. And the dude is 6'2", 260 or something like that. I mean, he's a grown man. So, the pick to C.J. Allen was probably the worst throw we saw. Without watching the film, I can't say if it was all on Carson. A lot of times receivers don't run a good route there. C.J. Allen may have just made a freak show play to get it. So I don't know what's going on there. But you take that away, back to Carson Beck for a second. It was ho-hum, but G-Day's ho-hum. You want to get through without getting hurt. Thank God Tate Ratledge's big old mullet head itself didn't roll up on his leg when that happened, because that does happen sometimes. Yeah. We came out healthy.
Can't trust those damn offensive linemen.
Man. You can't trust them.
Can't even stay on their own damn feet.
So
go ahead.
It's okay. I was just gonna say, the crazy thing is too, I thought Dylan Fairchild on the offensive line, back to that, he seemed to get more reps on there. But I've heard some stuff recently, weight room stuff, from some of the guys I know about Michael Morris, by the way, potentially being like one of the strongest men on the team. So, you know, when you got like probably the strongest dude on your team as a backup guard now or in the rotation with Fairchild, you got to feel good about that. They didn't play great to start with, but you made this point earlier. Your signature phrase, Roddy, is to your point. So I'll say this, to your point. The defensive line not having to fully respect the run game changes the entire way that the trenches are dug in the SEC play. I mean, there's a few years ago, they asked some NFL coach, like, why do you keep running the ball when you just run up the middle and have 3 yards? He's like, because the defense has to respect the physical side of the run game. And if they don't get their proper run fits, meaning how they attack an offensive lineman, square up, and then try to make a play. And if they try to do this early and the offensive line gets under their chest and moves them, there's a gap and it's around there. Guess what? When it's an obvious passing situation, those defense linemen are not fitting up. I mean, they're not trying to come match frame to frame with you, go nose to nose, and then beat you. They're trying to get sideways. They're trying to re-up, swim, you know, use their hands.
Hey, half a man.
It makes a huge difference in that situation. So, you know, I'm not going to overreact to anything I saw from G-Day the other day, but I think we're healthy. We have not had I know we'll talk about transfer portal stuff in a few minutes, but we have not had a huge rash of big name guys in the portal yet. The week is young. I know, I understand that, but it didn't get to be the day after and you didn't see 10 starters go in the portal. That's a good thing. So I feel good right now. All that to say, I feel good right now.
And you should. You mentioned Jalen Walker, and I remember he did have one A-gap blitz. He shot off like a rocket, knowing that snap count, I guess. And Jared Wilson had to tackle his ass.
Yeah,
got it. Went down. It's like, hey, I'm going to take the penalty, coach, because if not, my quarterback's going to die.
Look, man. I
think came through like a bullet.
I think I told the story on the show before. In 2003, we played at home, played UAB at home. UAB was always interesting because you get like the UABs, Troys, Middle Tennessees of the world, who they would get some guys that are big-time D1 players but maybe couldn't quite make the academic qualification stuff. So you find some dudes at those schools, and UAB had a nose tackle who's a good player, 6'3", 310, and can move. So he was on my left side, sitting up on me, my left side right over here, and we had a slide protection, meaning I was going first gap to my left, but my right side was my guard and tackle going out, so I had that guy backside by myself. So what I'm supposed to do is back up, wait for him, and then shoot my hands. But I decided to jump him, go straight at him, and take a risk and get him. That's a good idea. And Callaway would always tell us, you can jump set him if you want to. But if your misses, I'm on basically, you better not miss, right?
Yeah. It's high risk, high reward. So
we had one of our pass 44s we called, the old place where Greeny would do the great ball fake and turn his back to him, had it called. And I tried to jump set the guy. And when I jump set him, he stunted, and he went around to the other A gap, and I had no help over there. As a center, it's ready.
They're going off to the right, man.
So when I looked over, I could see the hairs holding his earwax in, because that's his ear hole right beside me. And I remember thinking in my head, a penalty is one gasser, a sack is two gassers, and Greeny's about to get murdered. So I reached up.
Back to the play, man.
I grabbed the guy right here, pulled him down, wrapped my legs around his, and tackled him. The ref hit me with the flag. And Greeny got up. Callaway was going nuts on the sideline. Greeny got up. He's like, my man. I got you, dog. So, yeah. Gary Wilson, I feel your pain, man. When those cats hit that hole, sometimes nothing you can do but tackle and move on, live to fight another play.
Oh, yeah. And again, he came through there like an absolute bullet. What could you do? We talked about Carson Beck. Give me your thoughts on Gunnar Stockton, because to your point, this was the – he needed all the reps he could get.
Yeah.
He had a great second half of the Peach Bowl. We saw a potential injury situation working its way through G-Day. FSU shows that you need more than two good quarterbacks, because they got down to their third, and even that one was sketchy.
Yeah.
Your thoughts on Carson Beck? I mean, Gunnar Stockton.
Yeah. I mean, I feel good about Gunnar, man. Like, the few times I've been to practice and seen Gunnar in person, I like Gunnar Stockton. He's got that same air about him that Jake Fromm, Stetson Bennett, those guys who are just winners have. And he has won in high school at a really, really high clip. I'll make a quick point. We've already talked about it a little bit. Gunner is handcuffed more than anybody else on the field by the quarterback rules in G-Day. Like him not being able to use his legs and let that be what he does from either doing QB run stuff, zone read stuff, or scrambling, making a play with his legs outside the pocket. He's probably more handcuffed than anybody else in the entire game. Not even probably. He's 100% at the biggest disadvantage from what his game is to what is having to happen on the field than anyone else out there. So that being said, he threw some really good balls the other day. He threw some really good balls to the second string wide receivers with the second string offensive line in front of him. So, and when I say that, recognize again, I'm not knocking those guys, but you have less experienced guys are the ones he's still trying to find a fit with. So when you combine the fact that he couldn't run, he couldn't threaten the defense with his legs, he couldn't use his big physical frame because he's got big leg and a wide butt. All right. He's not just to stand in the pocket, look over the field and just throw darts like Carson Beck. He's got a great arm. He can throw the ball anywhere he wants to, and he's talented with his feet. Does he need more live game reps before he could fully trust him? 100%. But there's no first-time starter you don't say that about. So yeah. I feel good about Gunnar Stockton. I would be shocked if Kirby and staff does not take a transfer portal quarterback with experience to bring on, though, just because of what you talked about with FSU. You saw Puglisi go down. If you have one guy go down at that point, like, you're another injury away from catastrophe. So, you know, I would be really surprised if Georgia didn't bring in somebody from a veteran standpoint to be one more quarterback on the roster. But I feel good about Gunner.
There's a quarterback. We're looking at some of the guys that are in the portal, and this guy caught my attention. He's at Pitt, named Christian Velu, V-E-I-L-L-E-U-X.
Okay.
Yeah, like.
Sounds Cajun.
That sounds Cajun. Let's get him in here. But now I'm with you there. I definitely think they want another guy. Kirby said, you know, it's been a mantra. I want four scholarship quarterbacks and some good preferred walk-ons. And you need that because the way they practice, it's relentless. Yeah. And today they got a quarterback commit in Ryan Montgomery for 2025, a very talented kid out of Ohio, a major pickup for Georgia. South Carolina wanted him badly. Florida needed and wanted him badly. And he was just waiting basically for Georgia to give him the green light. They did. They picked him up. And Georgia, I still think that they will go hard after Juju Lewis because you just can't stop recruiting a guy like that.
Right.
He's a Deshaun Watson type. You know, he's a Trevor Lawrence type. He's a Justin Fields type. You know, you just can't. Mills, you just can't let a guy like that go without giving it your all. But if they don't get him and they have to go, poor Georgia, have to go, you know, Gunner Stockton, Ryan Puglisi, Ryan Montgomery, Jared Curtis.
Yeah. What year is Jared Curtis?
Sophomore, 2026.
He's 26.
Sheesh. Dude, I just went to see him this past Sunday.
I heard he was a freak show for a sophomore in high school.
Damn. I know your kids watch. I was apologizing for cussing. Sorry for cussing. Family show. That kid.
Hoover Dam.
Wow. I heard his first pass. I didn't see it. I was talking to one of the coaches, Stephon Shivers, big defensive tackle.
Yeah.
Talking to his coach and his dad at the same time. And I hear, you could hear the ball spinning.
You said the same thing about Stafford a couple of weeks ago, by the way.
That's who he reminded me of. The only time I mentioned it a few weeks ago,
Roderick,
last person whose Roderick. Football I heard without having to see, I could tell who threw it.
Ooh,
it was Jared Curtis. And then the ball hits, and you see those hands go backwards because he's throwing to other quarterbacks when they're warming up.
Yeah,
and there was one where he kind of tripped over a bag and he threw it sidearm, and the quarterback that caught it turns to the guy behind him and says he was off balance and it was still a blank missile.
I actually saw that clip. Yeah, that's great.
Just saying, Georgia is great at be loaded at the quarterback spot. I think in the future looks great for the wide receivers.
Yep.
Tom Lovett is
he's wide receiver one right now. I mean, coming out of G-Day, there's no way you can't say he's the number one wide receiver in this offense. I mean,
agreed.
I mean, maybe it takes out
Tyrone Prothro catch at the end.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it shakes out differently when the games are played, but he's not a new kid who flashed. You don't know what you got. He was productive, especially when he was fully healthy. He was really productive. And he was a lot of that same role that Ladd filled last year. So there's going to be more opportunities for Dom Lovett on there. You know, it's interesting, man, like with Georgia right now, I don't feel like with the guys on the roster, you look at somebody and say, we've got another A.J. Green. We've got another George Pickens. We've got another super high-end first-round talent guy. And maybe some of those guys flash and turn into that, some of the young guys. I mean, I know it's certainly possible. But, man, it just seems like you've got a lot of really solid dudes that are good football players that you can count on and are really, really talented, by the way. I mean, maybe you don't have Marvin Harrison Jr. on your team, but you're probably, what, like eight deep at receiver right now? I mean –
Yeah, I mean, it's tough right now to pick a starting four because you're going to have to have a tight end. So let's say they go two by two, three other wide receivers, right?
Yep.
You got to have Dom Lovett out there as one of
them.
You got to have Dylan Bell.
Yep.
Ra-Ra Thomas?
Ra-Ra.
Or Arian Smith?
Colby Young. We've heard great things about Colby Young this spring. I mean.
Colby Young, you saw that touchdown. The ball was kind of – back shoulder behind him. He just goes up, muscles it, pulls it away. He is a nightmare in the red zone. He was good at Miami. He'll be good here. Then the kid that 17, the long pass to
Anthony Evans.
Evans. Yeah, I was going Anthony Allen in my head, but I'm like, Scott Allen. It's Anthony Evans, the third. That long first play of the game for Gunnar Stockton hits him downfield. I'm like, this kid, and you see how fast he is on this punt.
He's
return.
Electric.
He's explosive.
Yeah. He's electric. So, you know, I mean, it's a challenge.
Yeah, good luck picking your three guys.
It's a challenge. That's exactly right. And I mean, you've got to love the culture that's being built over there, because if you want to come in here and win the Biletnikoff at Georgia, if you want to win the Biletnikoff, you're not coming to Georgia. If that's your number one goal, if you want to come in and be on a great team that's going to be competing for the national championship every year, you come to Georgia. And Georgia got a lot of guys that have chosen to do that, and they are dogs, man. Dylan Bell is a dog. So
scary.
I feel good about it. I mean, you need somebody. We talked about this the other week. The biggest concern in the passing game is going to be, who does Carson Beck go to when it's nut-cutting time, right? Who's his guy? Right now, we're saying Dom Lovett. That's who it seems to be.
Him and Dylan Bell, I think.
And Dylan Bell. You got to feel like those are your guys. But, I mean, When it's the lights are the brightest, we're playing Texas, we're playing Bama, we're playing Auburn, we're playing Florida. Like, who's this guy? So we don't know that.
He had one chance to make a throw.
Yeah.
He threw to the corner of the end zone, looking for Dom.
Yeah. So if we're making overreactions off of one play, you're right. But we don't. So we're gonna have to, that's gonna be one of the storylines we're gonna watch. We're gonna try to keep track of that and see. But you know, I mean. Feel good about that. You know, we try to look at, like, the running back room right now. I think you saw ETN move enough where you feel good about ETN.
I feel great. I mean, he's in my notes. He's the first thing I have written down. You know, Trevor ETN has that burst. Those are my notes.
Yep.
He shot through that on that first carry. It's like watching DeAndre Swift again.
Yeah, he's different. He's got the DeAndre Swift. Stiff leg, by the way. I saw that a couple times.
Dead leg action?
He hit it with a dead leg. So, you know, and after that now, you got some questions after ETN going far, especially with Andrew Paul, because Andrew Paul was the other guy, by the way, who coming out of the G-Day game the other day. Everybody wants to see ETN. Everybody said great things about ETN. But I saw multiple people talking about Andrew Paul just saying, all right, you see a lot of guys – their second year after injury, they really look different. And saying that about Andrew Paul, he got great reps, ran the ball hard, did a good job. You felt like he's probably maybe your number two guy going in, and he hit the portal. May tell you what he feels
he's
about.
He's not my number two, though. Screw him. No, seriously, my number two guy was Rod Robinson.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. I think he got typecast as the big, hulking, between the tackles runner, you know, the kind of lean forward guy, no shake, no bake, no speed,
right. But
strong as an ox. Typical 3 yards in a cloud of dust running back at Georgia, you know. And I'm like, that kid showed me more than that. He looked a lot slimmer. He looked lighter on his feet than I've seen him. I don't know. And of course, you can't, when those guys run high, the defensive guys just kill them. You know, yep. I remember years ago hearing one of the Georgia coaches tell a new guy, hell, he might have been telling, it might have been to Todd Gurley or Keith Marsh, one of those guys. No, I take that back. It was, the guy that played running back and linebacker for Georgia, Richard Samuel.
Yeah.
His coach turned to him and said, son, if you run that high in the game, they will cut you in half.
Yes.
That phrase stuck with me forever. It's like, you better learn to lean forward, bend down a little bit.
Yeah.
But it felt like he was up on his toes, but not high. Yeah. And he was just cutting through there. I'm like, Rod, look at zero. Look at
he put a shoulder on somebody too, by the way. He had a really nice run where he put a shoulder on somebody and broke a couple tackles. So, you know, I hope he is the guy. So
yeah. He also got folded into an origami pterodactyl by Mykel Williams.
Well, Mykel Williams is a freak. he is an enormous human being who finally, by the way, looked like the guy that we were hoping he was going to be something last year. So you need a dude on the defensive line. You need somebody on the defensive line, a David Pollack, a Jalen Carter, a Jordan Davis, a big-time talent, Geno Atkins. We've had these guys for the last couple of decades that calls an offense to change what they're doing to stop that guy, okay?
Okay.
That did not happen last year for the most part, yeah. Right? I mean, Georgia was good up front, but they did not have one guy that you knew if he got a one-on-one was going to disrupt it. You know, think back through our days, my roommate, Pollack, right? We knew if it was a one-on-one situation and Pollack was outside and a play had to be made, what did you feel as a Georgia fan? Well, okay. Pollock's out there. We're going to be okay. And if they don't double team him and start leaving, you know, you double team Pollock, all of a sudden you're leaving Kedrick Golston one-on-one. You're leaving Robert Gathers one-on-one. Guys like that to play with us that ended up
in his first year, Gerald Anderson taking all those double teams and just leaving Pollock to make hat, you know.
100%. So if Mykel Williams becomes that guy, and he looked like it, by the way, in G-Day,
yes,
who can get on the edge and make a tight end stay with him, a running back go chip him, they slide protections where they roll out the other way. If it changes what an offense has to do from a scripting standpoint, a game plan standpoint, it frees up what you're trying to do from a defensive scheme so much, it's ridiculous. And Mykel Williams looks like he could be that guy for Georgia this year. And I mean, fingers crossed, dog fans, that he shows that in the fall. And I think he will, by the way. This is his paycheck year. Never underestimate a guy's paycheck year, okay? I saw Randy McMichael, 2001 versus Tennessee. Randy McMichael's in the locker room, and he said, I can't say it because my kids are like right over there. He basically said, I'm about to go make money. And I was like, Randy, what are you talking about, go make money? What are you talking about, man? We can't get paid. This is college football. That's illegal. And he's like, Tanner, man, you don't know nothing. He's like, I'm going to the NFL. Watch what happens. And it was the game where he had like the one-hand catch, leaning over the middle. He had like 15 catches for 400
yards.
I don't know what it was. It was a great game. So when it's a paycheck year for a guy, contract year for an NFL player, pay attention. If they're high-end talent, Mykel Williams is 6'5", 265 pounds, and moves like nobody watching our podcast has even ran in their sleep, okay? Everybody watching our podcast, the fastest you've ever ran in your dream, Mykel Williams will outrun you, and he's 6'5", 265 pounds. And he's trying to get paid. Watch him, man. Like, that's going to make a difference for him in the fall, and I think he's going to be the dude for us.
It's funny you say that. I remember when I'm covering those guys, I'm down on the field, and I usually line up behind. In other words, Georgia's offense is always coming towards me, and I'm in the backfield as their defense comes to me. That's how you get all the best angles to see what's going on at the field level.
Yep.
If you're up the coach's box, it's better, but if not, you can be down there. And there were times, though, when I was on the opposite side, I'm like, okay, there's only a minute left. I'm not going to go running down to the other end of the field, you know, carrying 60 pounds of camera gear. And you would see a David Pollack out there. You would see a hella Devontae Wyatt, Jordan Davis, whoever it was. And you know that there's a disruptor on the defense when you're zoomed in with a 600-millimeter lens, and the center's over the ball, and his eyes are cutting over.
Yeah.
Left guard's eyes are cutting over. Left tackle's eyes are cutting over. He's on the right side. He's a five technique on the right. And they're all looking over at him to see what he's doing. And I'm like,
they know.
That's not even play side, but they're all watching, you know?
Yep. cracks me up. So you hope he's that guy. You know, we saw the linebackers. We raved about the inside linebackers, you know, a ton. That's probably the place that's getting the most pub right now from a defensive standpoint. And then, you know, I think you go to the defensive secondary for a minute. We know what we got in Malachi Starks, right? He's going to be in the Jim Thorpe conversation at the end of the year in all likelihood. You feel like you know what you got when you look at Jake Pope and Dan Jackson. Two guys that are not going to wow you being the most athletic dudes in the world, but are really solid, have played really good football on the high levels. Then you see KJ Bolden, man, and you're like, okay, that dude, I get it now. Okay, I get it why Georgia wanted him so bad. Then and I don't know how. This is impossible. Ellis Robinson with a lot of the – I'm not sure where Rivals ended up with him last year. But Ellis Robinson in the composite rank, you look at all the big ranking systems.
Was number one cornerback in the nation.
Number one cornerback in the nation, right? Top five overall recruit. I mean, kind of in that – whatever it was. Top five, top ten recruit in the nation. Number one cornerback. Yet he got overlooked a little bit in the signing class, and it's probably because of how much pub KJ Bolden got towards the end. Ellis Robinson's name.
Flip on signing day, that's going to be the headline.
Right, that's the headline. Ellis Robinson was boring in recruiting, which, by the way,
so boring.
Give me boring, by the way. I love that. When I looked out there, when I was watching the game the other day, I try to – you talk about what stands out to you, right? Coach Donnan loves – I've heard him tell the story many times. He likes to take his wife to football games. Why did he want to take his wife to high school games, Roddy? Do you know why he says?
Oh, he told me all the time. He's like, she should be able to point out who you're there to see.
That's right. By looking at him on the field, she should say, that's the guy you got to be – you're after him, right?
Right.
When I saw Ellis Robinson, I didn't know who he was. I didn't look at the numbers yet. Didn't see all that. I just saw this dude line up at receiver at cornerback who – is big. He's not a slender guy, by the way. He's got a big body, and his arms were the longest arms anybody saw on the field. And then you saw his hips turn and take off running. You're like, that dude's going to be a first-round NFL pick one day.
He's a land speeder, man.
If he works hard, he will be a first-round NFL pick. Yep. So, you know, we got some questions in the secondary, but, you know,
I got very few questions in the secondary because I'm with you there. You got Malachi Starks, who plays next to him. But KJ Bolden on that first play, you know, he's the one in coverage on that long bomb throw, you know, for Gunnar Stockton. And it was like, oh, well, he burned a freshman. Congratulations, Anthony Evans. That was a great play. And yeah, you got past a five-star guy. But later on in the game, there's a third down play, and KJ Bolden stops it. Cold. They don't convert. They have to punt. I'm like, okay, you might have gotten burned, but you sure did bounce back pretty quick and make a third down stop. Another play, you're out there one-on-one in space, you know, your favorite area, and you throw it to one of the new tight ends who's got, you know, 60 pounds on him. And he drops that dude in the open field. I'm like, ooh.
Yep. Now
that's what you have with Malachi Starks. Malachi Starks, one of the greatest open field tacklers of all time.
They flash in ways you don't expect them to flash.
Yeah.
That being said, a problem for KJ Bolden to get on the field is named Joel Aguero. Yeah. I don't even know how to pronounce his name. Number eight.
Joel Aguero. Yeah. And I love him at star.
He looks great, man. I mean, and you think that Kirby is not afraid to play six DBs at one time. Especially if you get somebody who'll do what Javon Buller did the last few years, being willing to come and put his nose in there with men who are a lot bigger and bigger and stronger than he is. And take on contact and a hit, he'll play them. And I think you got some of those guys. So, you know,
you had that in Aguero.
My question at secondary is, who's your other corner? That's what we don't know right now going in. Who's your other corner?
See, to me, even there, you've got three. You've got three legitimate starters. And, you know, when you start out with Dalen Everett, I know he got a lot of grief last year, yep. But I'm like, look. Give me those growing pains for a guy that started all your games last year. What's he going to be like this year? You take Julian Humphrey, a former five-star, one of the top cornerbacks in the nation, coming out of high school. You had to fight to keep him. You know, he's looking around, about to hop in that portal. He sticks with Georgia. Got Daniel Harris. He's a starter anywhere he wants to go. Might be the starter here. Guy's an absolute baller. Ellis Robinson, as you said, I mean, yeah, he's raw as an onion at Georgia, But this is a guy who's got all the instincts. Like you said, when he turns and spins, he just kind of hovers across the ground. Reminds me of the old land speeder in Star Wars. You know, I'm like, this guy can
move. That's what you said when you said land speeder. I got it.
Land speeder, man. That's
I'm not a big Star Wars, Star Trek guy. I didn't know the difference in Star Wars and Star Trek until I got to college, by the way. Sorry. I know that's going to really offend some people watching tonight. I got you now. I'm following. You said land speeder earlier. I didn't catch it.
Hey, and Ja'Cory. I mean, Ja'Cory could play multiple spots. So to me, you've got more talent than you have spot. Yeah. Now, the hope is, can you keep them all?
Yep, I agree with that.
They are definitely, if any of those guys touches a toe to the portal, people are going to come running, you know?
Yeah. They're starting at, like you said, 9 out of 10 colleges in America right now. I mean, so, you know, I'm glad they decided to stay. I mean, the portal is open for another, week and a half or so, I guess now, week and a half. So you're probably going to see a few more names from Georgia go in. I would not be surprised if that's where it's at. I saw you guys did the scholarship breakdown. I think Dash did a write up this week about it. If it wasn't Dash, I'm sorry, I don't give him the credit. They can fight Dash about it. I think it said, because y'all don't know, nobody knows, because Georgia didn't release that information, but it seems like it's about 88, 89 guys on scholarship right now. So you need to get down 2 or 3. Andrew Paul's one. Tyler Williams, wide receiver, entered the portal. That's 2. So you probably got 2 or 3 more spots have to come open, and Georgia's probably going to add a quarterback. So you probably need 4 or 5 more guys to either decide to move on, go in the portal, get medically, you know, retired. All those things are possibilities that will happen. They'll work it out. But, we have not seen that huge rash of high-end guys hit the portal already, and that's enormous.
Well, see, my prediction was that what you would see in the portal are these guys in the 2 deep.
Yep.
You know, or two the depth pieces. I shouldn't even say 2 deep. I should say the depth pieces. I didn't see them losing any starters, but maybe a second-team guy or a third-team guy. What did you see? Andrew Paul, who would be – running back 3 on my chart. Tyler Williams, running back 6, 7, 8 in that range, maybe, you know, not maybe. Definitely one of your initial picks. I can see a few, you losing a few more and more power to them. You know, a lot of people want to get mad about it, but I'm like, look, you signed the number one class in the nation. You got 6 new offensive linemen. Somebody's got to go. You've got room for all those guys. Plus you want more out of the portal. And Kirby is a killer when it comes to roster management. It's driving him nuts. To that point, we sounded the alarm from one of our major donors a few weeks ago, and he came out and said, look, if we don't get money, we're going to lose a lot more people. They had the big gala. Jeff Foxworthy was the MC. They had a lot of opportunities. You could spend $100,000 and sit in on a defensive meeting with Kirby, or you have dinner with Kirby Smart, or sit in on a defensive meeting. They had all sorts of opportunities for the big money people to give it. You could buy a table for $20,000 or whatever. They raised $1.5 million. That might have taken, and then they also had a big contributor, one person who's like, okay, here you go. This person gave quite the load of money to UGA. That's not to say they're not still needing it, because you saw today Josh Brooks, the athletic director for the University of Georgia, sent out an email I'm assuming to everybody whose email they had, saying, look, we need you to sign up at the Classic City Collective, become one of our $21 a month sponsors.
Yeah.
If they didn't need the money, the athletic director wouldn't be sending out that email. So they do. And I know a lot of people say, look, I don't want to fund this. It's not fair. I get that. But there are others who will. And some of those people have stepped up. So at least if you're going into it, Kirby wants a fair fight. That's all he asks. He's told those people, I can outwork anybody. I can out-recruit them. I can out-scheme them. But I can't outpay them.
Yep.
So just get him so that he is level when it comes to money, and he will be able to keep who he wants and not have to keep who he can afford. That's the difference for the trajectory of the Bulldogs going forward.
100% right. I don't really have that much to add to it. That's very well said. And, you know, it's a struggle.
I worked on that in the mirror before.
Well, doggone it, you're good enough and people like you, Roddy. You did a good job. I mean, it's a different world we're in right now, right? I think we talk about it every single week, and we have for the last several months. The transfer portal NIL stuff is going to be different within the next 2 to 5 years. I don't know what that's going to look like, whether it be a salary cap situation, a revenue sharing situation come from the schools. It's going to be different. It's not being used like it was intended to right now. Guess what? You're talking about people cheating, they're tampering, whatever. People have been cheating in college football long before there were podcasts talking about people cheating in college football. I promise you that. So it's going to get regulated. It's going to get fixed. Whatever fixed means, I don't know, but it will be, it'll be different. So, you know,
there's an actual, there's a thing going right now in Virginia. The governor's about to sign it that would allow schools to take their NIL donations and, you know, the a collective or something and apply them towards seating, you know, seating preferences and ticket preferences and stuff like that, which is basically what in Georgia, you can't do it. So people say, look, if I give you $10,000, what do I get for it? Well, you don't get a damn thing. The kid gets to run off and spend it and whatever the hell he wants. And people are like, look, I just can't fund that. You know, they're just going to buy Lamborghinis and, you know, hookers and blow. Maybe, maybe not. You know, some of them are actually going to take care of their families. But a lot of people don't want to do that because they say, look, I don't get moved up in the McGill Society seat. Right. You know, I don't get better seats. I don't get to buy tickets to the Georgia-Florida game. But if your NIL contributions could be used that way, you would see a flooding of money coming in. And I think, and that's what we're seeing in Virginia. If that passes, and that holds up, then everybody else in America will do the same thing.
Everybody holds their breath because everybody in charge, and I'm not talking about, when I say this, make sure that you recognize, I'm talking about higher levels than, hey, good job. I like that better. Although I see your face more clear. That may not
be. Sorry about that. My apologies.
I'm not talking about Kirby, and I'm not talking about Josh Brooks. I'm talking about people on the legislative level, okay? Mm-hmm. I'm talking about people on the NCAA level, the school president levels, all those things. The ones that are actually making policy here, those people, by and large, I'll say it this way, as a group, they're cowards, okay?
Yes.
They don't want to be the first ones to step out there and do something and put their neck on the line to fix something that's freaking wrong, because they don't want to be the one that mess it up more and have the, you know, lose their job. They play CYA with the sport we love more than anything we've ever seen in college sports. So
absolutely,
all of these cowards are sitting there waiting
on for someone else to fix else it
to do it and try. Okay, yeah, that works. And doing it. And maybe they're watching our show tonight. I don't know. If you're watching our show, be willing to be vocal about something that needs changing and not worry about just hurting somebody's feelings with it. So, you know, hopefully Virginia passes something that is good. I have no idea what the legislation is. I have no idea what that. I haven't seen it, haven't read it. But hopefully it passes something good and others are then willing to step forward and to fix this in some way. I'm a free market capitalist. God bless America. God bless the founding fathers. I love where we're at.
Well, that's what we saw. I mean, California was the first to say, look, you can't keep kids from making money on their name, image, and likeness.
Yep.
And I felt the same way. I'm like, it is un-American for somebody who is famous to say, for me to go to him and say, hey, look, I have a car dealership. I want you, Todd Gurley, to come out front of my dealership and say, buy this Ford F-150. And he goes, well, I can't do that. I'll become ineligible to play college football.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, that's BS. You know, but you are not allowed to do it because you would lose eligibility. You can't make a living. You can't be. I mean, can you imagine Caitlin Clark going through all this and not be able to make a dime?
No.
What you mean for women's basketball? You know.
And by the way, NIL was made for Caitlin Clark. By the way, I mean somebody like that who is made for. It is not made for a 2025 offensive guard to be promised something if he comes to your team. Like that's not what it's meant to be. So
that's where we are. So, but to your point,
I agree.
You know, a lot of people like no good laws come out of California, but California did it first, and then Florida, and everyone else did. So to your point, there was somebody out there that said, "No, we think this is wrong."
Yeah,
I don't like a lot of the laws coming out of California. me politically, we're of two different. we're not congruent. But my aunt was out at Berkeley during the protests in the 60s. You know,
by the way, for all my fans watching congruent, I'm pretty sure it means not on the same page. But go ahead, keep going, Roddy.
So my aunt, she's to this day, she's 85. I just got off the phone with her. She's still a hippie, born and bred. You know, that's who she is. And we argue politics all the time. But that was one I'm like, okay, they got this one right. Because just fundamentally, you can't punish somebody who wants to make – for being famous,
no,
you know?
No.
So, and you can't tell somebody they can't make a living. to your point, though, pay for play is illegal. So if you can straddle that 1 foot in, 1 foot out, and come up with a way like Virginia is doing,
right?
More power to them, because nobody else, to your point, wants the mean tweets or the letters or the calls or the, you know, the Facebook posts. I don't want to take a chance. Look, you got to do what's right by the players. You got to do what's right by the fans. And if it just happens to help, all of a sudden, you know, Virginia Tech win some football games.
Our society is one that would rather do something to get a like than do what's right.
I'm going to put that on T-shirt.
Do it. So, you know, hopefully it gets fixed. I mean, I like kids being able to earn off their name, image, and likeness. They've got to get it out of recruiting, and they've got to fix the transfer portal. And then they've got to put some sort of contract or clawback language in there for the kids, for the donors to be able to give. I'm in the mortgage business for a living. If I decide to leave the company I'm at and go to the Bank of Roddy because they're wanting to hire me over there and pay me $10,000 a week to come work for them, you're going to pay me that, but you're going to put clawback language in there. I've got to stay with you for so long and produce so much, or else I've got to pay you back. That's the way the world works. There's contracts with that. And right now there's no contracts at all. And it's totally unfair for the schools and the coaches. Now I know people like Cry Me River, Kirby makes $50 million a year. I have no idea what Kirby actually makes. But, you know, like Cry Me River, like, I promise you, you don't want his job. I promise you, nobody watching this show right now wants Kirby Smart's job. It's a really, really hard job. So they've got to fix it, man, to fix the sport that I love more than any other sport there is. And I think it will get fixed in the next couple of years.
It will. Now, that's why I was saying the Virginia thing seems to be working out, or yep, could work out, be a huge way to get this thing done in-house, and we can stop hearing quite. And it still won't be, it's not the solution, but it is a part of the solution. So I'm excited about that. Speaking of Kirby Smart, you mentioned, you know, how much money he makes. Well, he earned it in the recruiting trail this past year.
100%.
Even with all the NIL stuff, if you were able to keep Ellis Robinson, number one cornerback, you were able to flip KJ Bald at the end. You know, those were two impressive feats. But you also got Joseph Ajoyne, who had a sack, number 99. He blew up that whoever was that poor left guard and on the goal line to make a tackle that was nuts. He had a sack. Then Chris Cole.
Yep.
Chris Cole almost takes a five-star inside linebacker. He almost pulls off a pick six going the other way. So as much as we were talking about KJ, I'm like, Chris Cole looked good. JJA looked good. To your point,
Gabe Harris. He's not a true freshman. But no. Gabe Harris looked really good.
He did. Gabe could be a monster on the other side. The fact that you were able, and I know it's not over yet, but the fact you're able to keep Gabe Harris and Damon Wilson, you know, all these the inside outside linebackers you brought in last year, you know, that's nuts. Xavier McLeod, I was impressed with him. Yeah. A couple sacks.
Yeah, talking about the portal, giveth, portal, taketh away.
Portal defensive lineman, yeah, for South Carolina.
He looked good. I mean, he's a guy that's battle-tested. I think the two positions, maybe three positions, where you could come in as a transfer and have the most immediate impact are running back, wide receiver, and D-line. Those three positions, you can line up, and they can design stuff for you to just attack and use your God-given abilities to go try to beat another man. And Xavier McLeod did a good job of that on Saturday.
Yeah, I thought he looked good. So the fact that you're able to get him, and I know it didn't work out very much for him at South Carolina, but Kirby's all about second chances, and he gave him one, and Xavier looks to be making the most of it. I mean, I don't want to get into is he consistent in his techniques. Kirby mentioned some of that. You know, we need him to play like this all the time. I don't know. We that's the first time we've really got to see him do anything. So it'll be fun to watch him. I'm trying to think of the other freshman. There's another guy that I thought played well who's not a freshman, but he's new to us. I'd consider him newcomer. So we're talking about the inside linebackers. You know, C.J. Allen's going to do his stuff. Smile Munda's not even out there. Raylan Wilson is a known quantity, number five. He's really, really good. But Troy Bowles.
Troy Bowles, yeah.
I saw some good stuff from Troy Bowles.
Very, very, very athletic guy. He's not quite as big as other guys, I don't think. I mean, maybe I have to refresh myself on roster stuff. But he's a guy that he talked about even play potentially safety. So maybe there's some star role for him there too, where he'll rotate to that situation some. Maybe it's crazy. Let's make it – I know we're bumping up on our hour, and I try to respect that part. Guys, this is a good point. We'll talk about it for a second. One of the reasons Kirby has such an extensive roster – of players with so much talent. One, you want a lot of players. I get it. That's a, you're like, Russ, oh boy, you're breaking news here, don't you? Kirby wants a lot of good players. Good job, fat boy. Like, you know, I get it.
Please send him that note in the comments.
It'd be great. So what I think we don't recognize as fans so often is how many different personnel packages these guys put together for situational football, okay? Meaning that if you want a guy who's a little bit better at coverage against a third down for Auburn, you may not want that same thing for a third down short yardage against Alabama. You need different guys.
Good point, good point.
They do that rotate in as situational things. And that's one of the ways, by the way, I think that Kirby and his staff keeps all these guys happy. It's not that they're lying to them about their roles and their playing time and what they do. They are truly preparing them for the situations that they expect to face in the fall. And if they prepare every guy over there to not just be a get a medal like every other soft kid in America for participating, but they prepare these guys to be contributors when the lights are the brightest. And no matter if you're first string, second string, third string, you may be the third string guy, but you may be the number one guy when the rocket package goes in. I have no idea what they call it. You know,
no, you're right. Hey, formation package, play, coverage. They're calling them defense. Those defensive plays are complicated because there's a lot going on.
Yep. So I think some of that. And you see a guy like Troy Bowles, who even if he's not the biggest guy in the world, but is really fast, a good instinctive tackler, and he's willing to work and willing to play and willing to get after it, they're going to find a spot for that dude on the field. So I was glad to see him out there. I really was.
And also shows how important it is to be an early enrollee.
Yes.
You know, so you get C.J. Allen and Raylan Wilson. They came in last January. He doesn't get here until 6 months later in June.
Yep.
And that was a huge 6 months. They both played last year. He didn't.
Yep. So. That's right. So, and you know.
Of course, I mean, he was banged up a little bit too, but. It's
yeah. He'll catch up. But, yeah, you're exactly right. So, it's a different deal.
All right, let's last couple guys here I want to ask you about. I loved the series with Gunnar Stockton. He throws to Nitro Tuggle.
Yes.
Okay, Nitro has a big catch down the field.
Is Hickey and Jesse Tuggle? Is Hickey and Jesse Tuggle? He was my favorite Falcon, but anyways, keep going.
Favorite? That would be a show on its own. Favorite Falcon. Mine,
mine was Jesse Tuggle. The wide receiver, Michael Haynes, I loved him because I had his card, and Scott Case, that played safety.
Love it. I have to go probably Jeff Van Note and Billy White Shoes Johnson.
Ooh, I like it.
And
go back to Gunner.
Running back. My dad always grabbed me by the thigh. You could be the next Andrew. So he has this long bomb,
throw. You should do a segment doing your impersonation of your dad because I think it's fantastic. But keep going.
You loved it when he told me I could have played football. I grabbed me by the Roddy, you could have been a fullback. Thanks, Dad. Yeah, okay, Baba. I love you too. The next play or the couple plays after that, the long throw to Nitro Tuggle, he throws to Sakovi White.
Sakovi White, yeah.
And Sakovi scoots in for a touchdown. Thanks to the massive block thrown by Nitro Tuggle taking out a safety.
Put it on the ground in there, man.
It just de-cleated his ass. I'm like, wow. You know, you're thinking those guys are going to get their welcome to the SEC, welcome to Georgia moment. They're delivering them.
They want to play.
They do.
And by the way, nothing flashes more for that staff that Georgia has over there than a wide receiver who blocks downfield. You do that, you earn reps, son. So yeah, I'm glad you brought that
laid him out.
I loved that play.
Yeah, that was my favorite one. I'm trying to think. Kickoff return, you got to like seeing Sakovi back there, Anthony Evans back there. Some top guys, top options when it comes to kick return, punt return. Yep. I mean, heck, Ra-Ra had one. He shot back up the field. So
yeah,
you got like where Georgia's at.
The kicking game looked good, by the way. Yeah. The extra point field goal. Punt. We feel good about Thorson. So, you know, one other just positive coming out of it. Felt good about that. So, yeah,
and I think that's the last thing. Your boy Mike Morris, you're talking about him in the weight room. See him line up at left tackle?
Did he?
Yeah.
I like that.
The second team, he switched over, you know, because he and Dylan Fairchild were going back with the left guard spot on the with the ones, but when he went over to the twos, lined up at that left tackle spot. I'm like,
I think it's pretty clear that they're going to find their offensive line. That's what I know the most about. They're going to find their best eight or nine guys, and they're going to have them positioned to play a lot, because you can't have five or six guys being prepared and that's being all you have. So Michael Morris, Dylan Fairchild, I don't know who will be the starter there. Fairchild looked like ahead of the day, but that doesn't mean much. Maybe, you know, the fall camps will decide that. But Michael Morris is going to play a lot of football for Georgia for another couple of years.
Hey, as long as you keep him.
Yep.
You know, Jamal Merriweather looked really good out there. We saw the new guys, saw Daniel Calhoun getting up and getting in there a bit. So
Monroe Freeling.
Yeah, Monroe was over there. Who's the other freshman that actually got some? I can't think of him. He was playing the right guard spot. But anyway, a lot of new faces. G-Day was absolutely loaded. To your point, it was very vanilla. But if you didn't walk out, if you went to the game or you watched it on TV like I did, you didn't think, man, this has that title team feel to the to the depth pieces.
Yeah,
I agree. Can hang on to them. Yeah, I know Ohio State will be loaded. I know Texas will be loaded. Alabama, Ole Miss is buying themselves a good team. You're going to face some really good squads out there. But as Kirby Smart said when we asked him about the defensive line the other day, he goes, I wouldn't trade my guys for anybody in the country right now. You can't trade this roster for anybody else's. Yeah.
Zero shot. You're 100% right. So, yeah, I feel good, man. Let's keep everybody on the straight and narrow, healthy, out of trouble through the offseason and go from there. So,
yeah, we'll be walking on eggshells for the next 5 months or so. How it goes.
Yep.
And Jason Cancel says, we started with a cross. We're going to finish with Frisbee. Georgia, the men's ultimate team, is ranked number one right now, heading into the end of the season. So
that's Frisbee, by the way. Almost positive.
And I know ultimate team, Frisbee is tough because you have to run. It's like soccer. You just never stop running. So I don't like it.
I ain't real good at Frisbee games.
I can sit there in the yard and throw it to you, but that's about it. All right, folks, that's all the time we have for this week. We will see you next Wednesday at 8 o'clock. Be sure to tune in. Take care.
Go Dawgs.